This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's another Saturday morning when we talk cars, specifically yours and problems with your car, your truck, your van. And before you bring it in for service, you might want to know what's wrong with it. Well, by all means, give us a call or a text if that's easier. Nick Stoffel is with us, who runs a place called Lloyd's Automotive on beautiful Grand Avenue in St. Paul. Nick, good morning to you.
Good morning, Denny.
How are you guys, you and your crew at Lloyd's this past week? I ask you that all the time, and I know you're busy every week, and that's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, we're in a good groove. You know, things are, like you said, we're fortunate to stay pretty busy most of the time, and you know, the bays are full and the schedule's full, so we're all happy.
All right, and we're happy to again answer any kind of a car care question you may have. You don't have to be any gearhead or motorhead to ask a question. If you drive and you're having problems with your vehicle and want to know, maybe get a little diagnosis over the air, call us or text us, but again, we always like to say sooner rather than later. Our time goes by so quickly. Nick will take his leave about 7:45 when Ted Farrell steps in with his wine chat. So call us or text us. One number will get you here, 651-461-9226. Again, 651-461-9226. We would love to hear from you. Now, I've got a text, and I'm not sure if this happens with certain phones when folks send text or something, but this is spread out on a number of lines, so bear with me. I'm going to have to kind of, it's like putting together a jigsaw puzzle, so bear with me, Nick. This happens to be a 2016 Dodge Grand Caravan. Yesterday, the engine symbol came on. The chime also sounded. So then when I got home, I toggled the key 3 to 5 times to the accessories, but not actually did turn it on. Anyway, he got a new battery, he or she, I should say. Took it for a test drive. Battery was replaced in August of 2022. I guess their question is, they're still having issues, should they bring it into the shop? Is it safe to drive?
Well, the check engine light is kind of your heads up something's going on. And the basic rule of thumb is if the light is on and the vehicle's running okay, make an appointment, get on someone's schedule, you know, maybe it's a few days or a week, typically you're okay. Now, if the light is on and it's running poorly, well, now we need to take this a little more seriously and probably try to just bring it over to the shop and see if they can squeeze you in. And the last step is if that light is flashing, that's telling you that there's a what we would consider a catalyst damaging misfire where it could create significant problems that could be permanent. At that point, if the light is flashing, you really need to stop that vehicle and have it towed. So if the light is on, it's okay. Get on the schedule. If the light is on, it's running poorly, get it over there quickly. And if the light is flashing, you need to stop and call a tow truck.
All right. I've been told, and we were talking about birthdays earlier this morning, Nick, and there's a gentleman, anybody who's been in public safety around these parts for many years will know the name Nick O'Hara. Nick has a birthday today. Just thought I'd throw that in. Happy birthday to Nick O'Hara.
And a good first name.
Yes, like that. Great, solid name. All right. Yeah, happy birthday, Nick. Let's see. 2017 RAV4, 56,000 miles on it, have gotten oil changed every 10,000. Last change, September of last year, at 50,000. Can I wait for the next change at 60,000 miles, or should it be done yearly regardless of mileage? We get that all the time.
We do. You know, as far as the interval goes, my opinion, based on my experience, is every 5,000 miles. If you're not putting 5,000 miles on the vehicle in a year, it should be done once a year still. Keep in mind that oil will absorb the moisture, which, you know, that condensation can create sludge. So we want to keep the oil clean. You might not be using up the oil side of it, but if there's a lot of moisture in there, that too can be very hard, create sludge, block oil passages, and create other problems. So My opinion, once again, it has been, you're not going to change it. It's 5,000 miles on that synthetic oil. If you still use conventional oil, like an older vehicle, maybe 3,000 miles. But if you're not even doing that in a year, you still need to at least change it once a year.
Yeah, good idea. This listener, Nick, has a 2014 Jeep Grand Cherokee. I'm getting hot air from the driver's side, cold air blowing on the passenger side. I've checked the sink and the heater, and both sides say they are the same.
So the indicator, the dash is telling you it's hot, but obviously it's not. So likely what's going on, that there's a little motor that controls a flap on the heater door. It could be that the motor itself is faulty. Could be that the door is somehow damaged. You know, it's still not too cold yet, but I assure you whoever's riding in the passenger seat is not going to want to have cold air on them. So you should probably get on someone's schedule. They can, you know, get a voltmeter, do some testing, maybe even connect a scan tool, see what kind of information is there. But I suspect that there's a little motor or actuator that needs to be replaced.
Very good. 651-461-9226. Any kind of a car care question you may have for Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive. What's the reason why my remote start won't work on my new F-150? I make sure the doors are locked, hit the button two times like it says. Thank you.
Well, my follow-up question would be, with the remote start, if the check engine light is on, it's not going to work. It could also be maybe, you know, each vehicle's a little differently, but if there's a certain level of fuel, if it's too low on fuel, it also may not work either. So I would say make sure the indicator's off. There's no warning lights on the dash. It's full of fuel. Try it again. If it's still not working, you know, once again, you know, that's always my answer is we got to connect a scan tool, look at some data, see what's missing there to keep that from working.
Okay. Morning, Denny. Hello. Great show. Thank you for listening. We have, Texter says, a 2016 Honda Pilot. The front tires need to be replaced. The rear tires have a lot of tread left. Should the new tires go on the front or should the back tires go to the front?
Well, that's going to be an opinion. I do believe a lot of places will tell you, depending on the tread, that they're going to want to put the new tires on their rear because they're worried about hydroplaning. My opinion is if those tires truly are in good shape and they're close to new, I would probably put the best tread up front. You know, you get some snow on the road and you want to have your best traction to get you going and stopping. So it really depends on the true condition of those rear tires. Now, keep in mind, if those rear tires are less than half, I honestly might consider getting all four because that difference might be too much tread-wise. So I would get a closer look at those rear tires before I made that conclusion.
Speaking of tires, we got a text real early this morning. I may have mentioned it before we went on the air about all-season tires versus snow tires, winter-type tires. For someone who does not drive that often at all, would you suggest, and I know who knows what kind of a winter we're going to have, good all-season tires would suffice in most cases for somebody who does not really drive a lot?
I do believe that a good all-season tire is sufficient, even if we have a lot of snow. I mean, at some point, it doesn't matter what's on the car. If you get a foot of snow on the ground, you're not moving very well regardless. But I would say in some of the sportier vehicles with a really low-profile tire, getting a set of winter tires does help. You know, the way they're designed, the way the rubber compound is, the way the tread design is, it is gives you better traction. That's, you know, no doubt there. However, at what expense? You know, it can be quite costly to get a, you know, not just a set of tires, but a set of wheels, sensors. So it can be a pretty big investment. But on most vehicles, I don't think it's necessary. A sportier vehicle, low profile tires, it probably makes a bit of more of a difference. It might be worth it.
And then when we've talked about it in the past, when you get snow tires, you got to find a place to store them. So storing is a whole other issue as well. All right. We need to take a quick break. We have more show to come. If you have any kind of a car question, let's hear from you. 651-461-9226. This is News Talk 830 WCCO, where the temperature reading 34 on our way to near 40. And a good morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show. Denny Long here, along with ASE certified technician Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive in St. Paul. And Nick, again, for those that maybe need the help from you and your crew there at Lloyd's, how do we find you guys?
Yes, sir. So if you have a question, need a little advice before you take it in, you can get a hold of us at 651 228-1316. And if you're out for a stroll down Grand Avenue, stop and say hi. We're at 982 Grand. That's on the corner of Grand and Chatsworth. And then obviously, please do check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
We will do that very thing and give you that info before Nick leaves us, which is about 7:45 this morning. Call us or text us with your car problem, 651-461-9226. Here is another. It doesn't say the model, but it's a 2001. I went to start it, parked in my garage. It started fine, but when I put it in reverse, it just revved the motor. What do you think I've got? What kind of a problem do I have here?
Well, if the transmission is truly neutralizing, which it kind of sounds like there, we might have could be a significant problem there. I would try to get the vehicle out of there and put it in forward, see if it'll work. Another thing too, maybe let it run for a few moments, let it warm up to see if it engages. Make sure the parking brake is not on. A couple simple things to check there, but ultimately you might end up having to have that towed in so someone can get underneath and get in there and figure out why it's not going into gear.
Yeah. No, it's a variable here. How long, Texter says, should batteries last on a new vehicle?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I still believe a good quality battery, 4 to 5 years, I think, is reasonable. I think some of the newer technologies and some of the higher-end batteries will last longer. That being said, we have replaced them at 3 years, so it's a big variable. If you parked in a controlled climate where it's not hitting the deep cold, that might help. There's so many cycles of a battery, too, so it really depends on how you drive, how long your drives are. Is that alternator charging the battery fully when you're driving because you're driving long enough? So I would like to say 4 to 5 years, I would be, okay, that's pretty good. If your battery's 5 years old this time of the year, you're starting to be concerned, have somebody test it. If it's testing great, no worries. If it's testing fair, you might want to replace it because if you do get some cold, cold weather, you don't want to be stranded.
Absolutely. This text, Nick, says sister-in-law's Ford Fusion has a power steering fault code. Anything we can check, or is it a done deal and call the repair shop?
Depending what the code is, there's probably a couple things that we can test, but a lot of those power steering systems are kind of enclosed where, like, if it's a control unit or it's the motor, there's not a lot of pieces that you can repair. So depending on the code, will kind of lead us in which direction we're headed there, but likely there's going to be some sort of moderate repair is the best way to put it.
Okay. Here's a 2017 Hyundai. Texter says, I brought my car into the dealer, had the oil changed on Wednesday. Yesterday, I noticed fresh oil drips under my car in the garage. I reached out to the dealer. They have not gotten back to me yet. Can the car be driven, do you think?
Check the level. A couple drops, maybe there's a gasket or an O-ring that just needs a little snugging up, so it's not the end of the world. But you need to make sure it's full of oil. Obviously, they changed the oil, but you can't ignore that and just keep driving it. So I would check the level. It's full of oil. I would drive it back to them and say, hey, I was just in here for service. It's dripping some oil on the ground. I suspect they're going to find a way to sneak in and fix that for you.
Yeah, I would hope. Interesting enough, we've got the smartest listeners out there. Regarding that F-150 that did not, the remote start didn't work. Texter says it won't work if the hood is not closed completely. Check the manual. So that's something to check. So thanks for that. And let's hope that works. Let's see. 2018 Honda CR-V, keyless ignition. Battery was new 15 months ago despite turning everything off prior to exiting the car 3 times. Whoever it is, returned to her car, found accessories on. No warning icons on. The only way to turn them off is to start the car. Then 2 mornings, the battery was dead. First time I've heard of this. Have you heard of that?
We do see some strange things here. I wonder if something with the ignition switch itself isn't cycling off. Cars have evolved, but they're still pretty, straightforward in the sense, you used to turn the key back to off and pull the key out, it would shut off. Well, you hit the button, the electronics part is the same. But it doesn't mean that switch, just like in the old style, can't go faulty. And if any power is finding its way back through into some of those accessory items, they will draw the battery down. So it's probably something where you'll get it in, print out the schematic, find the fuses, take a voltmeter and check to make sure that where power is when it's supposed to be, and then when you shut the vehicle off or turn the key off, where the power should stop. And if there's power getting through, then you have to dig a little bit further, figure out the source. Is it the ignition switch, a relay, a module? Something there is getting stuck on that's wearing that battery down. So that you need to get an appointment, get that looked at before you wear that new battery down, where you'll have to replace it also.
Yeah, I should say. Nick, hang on. We're going to have a look at that CCO forecast and be right back. Nick will be with us till close to 7:45 this morning, answering any kind of a car care question you may have. 651-461-9226. From Newstalk 830 WCCO. And a good Saturday morning to you. Welcome back to CCO's Car Care Show, here every Saturday in the 7, right after the 7 o'clock news break, so keep that in mind. Our friend Nick Stauffel from Lloyd's Automotive, ASC certified technician there, is answering all those car care questions. And boy, I tell you what, Nick, busy morning today. Folks are up and at them, and they want some diagnosis over the radio here. Hi, car care guys. Thank you. Good morning. I've been told, Texter says, by my mechanic, that the ball joints need to be replaced on the front of my 2010 Chevy pickup. Can you tell me a little bit about that? So they want, evidently, to know about the process. What is it, and what kind of a job is that?
So most vehicles have at least a lower ball joint. And what that is it allows, the front and rear wheels rotate as we go down the road. The difference is that the front wheels need to turn left to right. So in order to have the wheels have multiple accesses, we have a ball joint at the bottom and often at the top, like on that truck, for example, that allow that wheel to turn left and right and go back and forth. It allows for the suspension to do its job. Well, what can happen is that's like a stress point, a weight-bearing point, and they wear. So a ball joint is kind of like our shoulder. It's a ball, ball and socket joint. And over time, potholes, bumps in the road, the weight of the vehicle, all that above and below will cause wear and cause them to become loose. Well, when they become loose, there's a little bit of pivot or a little bit of movement, deflection in that ball joint. If they get bad enough, and we've probably all seen that car on the side of the road where that wheel's kind of sitting sideways and cantered in, well, that's because the ball joint may have come out. So when you take your vehicle in and they, what we call, shake it down and they check the ball joint's tie rods, if we determine that that ball joint is loose enough that it needs to be replaced, we'll recommend that. Now, the replacement procedure varies. On the pickup truck, they're actually pressed in, so that can be quite a significant job, takes several hours, depending if it's the upper or lower or both sides. Some vehicles, that ball joint is part of a control arm, which is a little simpler repair, but the control arm costs more, so the price oftentimes ends up being the same. So I would anticipate even just one ball joint can be several hundred dollars, sometimes more. And then, of course, once you replace those, you need to do an alignment to ensure that when everything goes back together, it's back to the specifications to keep those tires wearing properly and the car going down the road on a straight line.
All right, good info. Nick, here's a 2020 Chevy Silverado, 50,000 miles on it. It went for a short drive, the texter did, the other day, looked at the oil pressure gauge. When I was at a stop sign, noticed it was zero, which kind of shocked me. Put it in neutral, revved up the engine. The pressure gauge came up, has been good ever since. You think that's any kind of a concern?
Well, I would pay close attention to that, of course. If the oil light came on with that, or if you notice at lower RPMs that the gauge is starting to look like it's, not where it used to be. Now, keep in mind that those gauges aren't, I know there's numbers there often, and it's a decent measurement of pressure, but what we're really looking for is the consistency, like meaning on my particular truck, that gauge, is always kind of in the same spot. If I notice something different, like it's way lower than it used to be, that's a reason for concern. So are we worried oil level? Is the switch faulty? On that vehicle, there might be a screen there that kind of makes sure that there's no contamination getting into the sensor. So is that screen plugged? So there's a few things that could be happening there. If it doesn't happen again, over time, you'll probably kind of forget about it, and it's probably okay. If you're noticing, though, that just doesn't look how the same as it used to, I'd probably get on somebody's schedule sooner than later. If the gauge is at zero and the oil light comes on, the little red light comes on, then you need to get in right away. I would not be driving that because you could potentially do some permanent damage there.
Okay. A lot of truck questions this morning, as you notice, Nick. Here's one. I changed the oil on my 2024 F-350. The manual says it takes 15 quarts. Wow. It is the high output motor. 15 quarts didn't even show on the stick. I put 16 quarts in, and it's about 3/8 inch up on the stick now. Looks like it would take one more quart. Do you think I should just leave it at 16 quarts? Man, that's a lot of oil.
Well, that's a diesel engine that we're dealing with there. You know, I would recheck the specifications. I would maybe even call the dealership to see the quantity that they're seeing there. My opinion, or my experience has been when we have a specification that holds, you know, on a gasoline engine, if it's 4, 5, 6 quarts, it's pretty darn close, to be honest. I don't, even a diesel, I understand it's 15 quarts, but to be 2 quarts off makes me pause a little bit there thinking that something's not right. I wouldn't want to overfill it, I guess is where I'm getting at. So I would do my research. I would count the bottles again and just make sure that we're not, we don't want a situation where we're a couple quarts overfilled, because that also can be very hard on an engine.
Yeah. Here's one, Nick. The hood release cable on my 2007 Range Rover broke off at the handle in the passenger compartment. I used the pliers to pull the broken cable and get the hood to release. Any tips on how to thread a new cable from the passenger compartment all the way to the top of the wheel where I can finally reach it? Such as, should I tape it to the old cable and pull it through as I remove the old cable?
I like that procedure. Make sure you're using a high-quality duct tape that they're not going to come apart. The last thing you want to have happen is you pull it through and then the other cable's not with it. Now you're stuck. So make sure as you're feeding it through that it's, you know, take your time. Make sure they're taped nice and tight and close to each other so they can fit through that tight area. But yeah, if you feel it's getting stuck or snug, maybe go back, you know, kind of work it. Like I said, just take your time. You don't want to have the old cable come out without the new cable attached to it, because now you're taking a bunch of stuff apart to do the same process there. So just take your time. I think that's the right plan.
I think we have time for maybe one more. We've been busy this morning. This is a 2016 Honda Pilot. The washer fluid sensor says the tank is empty, but it's full. What do you think is causing this?
Well, you know, the sensor could be faulty. It could be dirty, or maybe the connection on the plug-in is bad. So I would, you know, if you're a little bit of a do-it-yourself, or you can find the reservoir at the base, there should be a sensor there, or maybe it's on the side. You can unplug the electrical connector, make sure there's no obvious corrosion in there. You know, make sure you plug it back in firmly. The next step we would do is probably actually get a voltmeter out and check the continuity of that switch to see if it is faulty. So if you have that capability, you can unplug it, take your voltmeter, put it on the ohm set, and check for continuity, see if there's not an open sensor there. If that is the case, well, then you know that sensor might be replaceable, but in some cases it's part of that reservoir itself, so a little more research on that end. But if you're do-it-yourselfer, that's probably a job you can handle in your garage if you have a little bit of heat.
Dear, that would help. Nick, we're out of time. Always a pleasure. And just a question. Is Lloyd's open on the Friday after Thanksgiving?
We are. And what we've learned over the years is it's actually a pretty busy day because a lot of folks are off and they're gone shopping for the day. So we'll have a parking lot full of cars when we get there in the morning because people are at Black Friday. So, no, it's a good day for us in our industry. So if you haven't made your appointment for your shop or dealership, it's a nice time when you don't need that extra car because everyone's off of work to get in and get it serviced.
It's a good idea. But how do we find Lloyd's now? Give us the info.
Yes, sir. So quickly here, by phone, 651-228-1316. As you know, Denny, we're at 982 Grand Avenue in St. Paul, 2 blocks east of Lexington Parkway. And if you have the time, please check out our website at lloydsautomotive.net.
We will do that very thing. Happy Thanksgiving to you, your family, Nick, and all the good folks at Lloyd's Automotive. And let's meet up again next Saturday.
Sounds great. Thanks, Denny.
You bet. Nick Stoffel from Lloyd's Automotive.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. for millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.